Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hi guys, so we've got something a little bit different for you this week. Tech World was invited last week to a roundtable event where we got to sit down with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is the star of Oliver Stone's latest film, which is a biopic of the NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. We managed to get half an hour of his time to sit around and talk about mass surveillance, the recent election of Donald Trump, social media echo chambers, you know, light stuff. The other voices around the table, so that you don't get confused, are Mary Claire Rogers and Silky Carlo from the civil liberties group Liberty, Barbara Bukovsa, a human rights lawyer at Article 19, Harmit Kambo from Privacy International, and another journalist, Abigail Chandler from Gizmodo UK. Hope you enjoy it. Snowden is in UK cinemas December 9th.
UK Tech Weekly.
I'm Scott. I work for techworld.com. We're a tech B2B publication, mostly writing about startups. A few of my colleagues were out in Lisbon the other week and they saw you speak.
Oh, cool, yeah, man. So, yeah. Right on. Yeah, that was a really great conference.
Yeah, it's a big one. So, yeah, so that was where my editor was last week. So that sort of gives you a feel of what we're covering.
Cool.
I'm Harmit. I work for a charity called Privacy International. Our name should speak for itself. We campaign for privacy issues all over the world, including particular folks in the UK and US.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So, a lot of interest in Snowden.
Yeah, that's quite pertinent.
Yeah. I'm Abigail. I'm a freelance journalist. I'm with Gizmodo UK. Mm-hmm. We're a sort of tech.
Yeah.
Kind of site, quite interested in all that sort of stuff. We've done some interviews recently with whistleblowers, mm-hmm. And done quite a lot of coverage of recent, there's a bill that's just passed in the UK that allows all the surveillance. So yeah, we've been really interested in all that stuff.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard about that bill.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Rough times.
I'm Marie Claire. I'm the campaigns director for Liberty, who are one of the UK's oldest domestic human rights organisations, and we have been working around privacy, human rights, whistleblowers as well for a long time. But yeah, like Abigail was saying, this is a particularly dark week, I think, for privacy campaigners in the UK with this bill, which we can talk a bit about. And
yeah, I'm interested to. I haven't had a chance to read anything about it.
Not great.
Yeah.
That's the understatement.
Yeah. That's the British way of describing it, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm Silky, and I work at Liberty too. I'm a policy officer in technology and surveillance. I've been working for the whole year on this bill, which basically puts everything that Ed Snowden revealed into statute.
Yeah.
So it's quite bad times, and that went through this week on Wednesday. Prior to my time at Liberty, I worked for the Courage Foundation, which you might know is Ed Snowden's official defence fund. And that's where it started. It now looks after like other whistleblowers and hackers. But yeah, that's me.
Okay, great.
Hi, I'm Barbara. I work at Article 19, which is an international free speech organisation. I'm a lawyer. And, you know, people look down at IT people, so lawyers, they are the same category. But I work a lot on human rights and technology, and also how to make technology accessible to the people, but also human rights, how the layperson can benefit from human rights, which they think is a technology, something very complex.
Yeah.
They don't see as a part which is important for their daily life.
Mm-hmm. Great. I'm at a table with the good guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I'm really happy to be doing this with you guys. That's wonderful.
I'm guessing it's a bit different to what you're normally doing in these things. Where,
yeah, so. Well, yeah, sure. I mean, usually my job is to try to pique the interest of folks who wouldn't normally take an interest in this sort of stuff. But I'm certainly happy to talk with you guys as well.
Sweet. Well, I mean, that's really what we want as well. Like, we have, on this particular piece of legislation that's just passed, we have been battling to try and pierce the public consciousness, and it was something that we saw in the film, that we see that argument, nothing to hide, nothing to fear, and we, it's, you know, it's so boring almost to hear that. I imagine, like, you feel the same. Mm-hmm. But we haven't cracked the answer. Like, in the film, he says, well, everyone's got something to hide, and that's what we've been saying for so long, but it hasn't done it. We haven't, I kind of feel like we've sort of failed as campaigners to communicate how the impact of this, mm-hmm. it feels really abstract and complex and kind of passive. Like, we were talking a bit about the stuff around data, and we're always talking about how this data will be held, these millions, hundreds of pieces of information being held on you, and held sounds so passive. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't, so what? Like, mm-hmm. I kind of get a lot of the public response is sort of, Tesco hold that, and that is where we struggle to show that it's not passive. Mm-hmm. It isn't passive. It's
just to add to that, I think there was the central paradox of Edward Snowden, and like everyone else in our most people in our community, you know, I see him as a hero. But the real paradox of the Snowden revelations were they didn't demonstrate harm. Mm-hmm. So, in the wake of those revelations, the US government said, look at how he's harmed our nation. Mm-hmm. Look how he's endangered American lives. Now, they had no proof of that, and if they had proof, they would have put it out there.
Yeah.
There was no evidence of it whatsoever. But the counterpoint to that is that we haven't been able to use those Snowden revelations to demonstrate harm either. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is that, in effect, what's happened is that Snowden revealed that for the last 13 years, all of your communications, everything, has been chewed up by this machine. You've been watched. And you tell people that, and they think, okay, well, I haven't noticed. Mm-hmm. They might not be conscious of that, but that's in effect how it's backfired. And that's not to criticise what Snowden did whatsoever. It was absolutely vital that he brought this out into the public sphere. But the whole, is turned into a massive kind of backfiring, because Silky and Mary Claire mentioned, this very process in the UK, at least, has actually led to Snowden's revelations. Mm-hmm. Rather than it turning into a backtracking of these kind of powers, the UK government has used that just to legitimise these powers, saying, mm-hmm. okay, now it's out in the open, let's just put it in the statute books.
Yes.
So it's an absolute kind of backtracking of what should have happened following those revelations.
But, you know, I will disagree with you with one thing, that people don't care, because I think that's a problem of the Western world, like Americans and, you know, British, because they haven't experienced the censorship, right? Like, if you look at people at Eastern Europe, like where I come from, but our region, I'm from Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia, but, you know, you there during communism, I mean, first of all, people don't trust the state, they don't trust the corporations as much as here. So, obviously, you don't need to explain to Eastern Europeans what the government is doing in its England, why you should be concerned about every detail gathered about you, because if they know everything, obviously, you know, pointless to try to hide something, because they already know. So, to Eastern Europeans, you don't need to explain this anymore, because we already know. And we will be like, how come you are not all up in arms? And so I think that, you know, in advocacy strategy, that's are the countries you need to mobilize, because the people there will understand. And also the harm of having this information is so much more present there here. Because here people are like, what? Like, you know, if you tell people, like, somebody comes and opens your Christmas presents, you know, I mean, obviously they would mind it, but they don't see this connection with the data. Mm-hmm. How other people who experience that living for, like, 40 years, they know. And they think the NSA is same as KGB, you know? Mm-hmm. They wouldn't think that, oh, like, NSA, you know, it's our trusted patriotic institution. Mm-hmm. We have KGB, we don't trust them, mm-hmm. you know? So that's how you convince people, in my view, but, you know, I'm not a campaigner.
Mm-hmm. So, Joe, do you think, like, putting this into, like, a way that people are used to taking information, like a movie, you know, it's a narrative, it's got a human element, do you reckon that will help break mm-hmm. what we're talking about here and this passivity that you've got with the public? You know, you can ask people to read Glenn's editorial, and you can ask them to read every book and watch every documentary, but I think, you know, a big movie that's, you know, opening in Leicester Square, you know, that sort of thing. Do you reckon that'll break it?
I mean, I can't promise that it would completely break it, but I think that's hopefully a step in the right direction, and certainly this movie is less about policy and less about technology, and it's more of a human story. It's a human drama about this guy who decided to do what he did. So, hopefully it's a step in the right direction. I'll tell you one thing. I mean, I'm just addressing a few different things that you guys just said. One thing I've found when having conversations with people who are less versed in this type of stuff, who are more prone to say, well, I have nothing to hide. One thing I learned is that there was a slogan that went, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. And that was a slogan of the Nazis. And they said that all day long. That was like a staple slogan of the Nazi party, which should tell you something, right? So I've found that when I've said that to people, they've been like, whoa, really? Are you serious?
Problem is, even with that message, sorry, Silky, is that, that even that message bounces off people. So we tend to avoid the Orwellian Big Brother kind of language because people think it won't happen here, unlike in Eastern Europe. So I think in the UK and the US, that message doesn't really penetrate other than to people who are already pretty suspicious of government intentions. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really convert people who essentially see our Western governments as benevolent. It doesn't really penetrate there.
I don't know, and I know there are a few things that we disagree on. Like, I think that the Snowden revelations do show enormous harm, not just on the abstract level, on an abstract level to democracy, but also to some of the individuals that have been spied on, some of the groups that have been spied on, NGOs, charities, victims of torture.
Like the film tried to do it, didn't it, with the drone strikes footage, and that sort of shocked me, you know, when you see it.
I think the film did that really well. I also think, and I'm wondering what you think now about the film in a kind of post-Trump context, whether now I sense that there's going to be a real change, that now what Snowden warned of with turnkey tyranny, now people are finally starting to sense, because now you've got someone in power who has committed to surveilling all mosques, banning all Muslims, deporting millions of people. Do you think that it takes a different meaning almost?
Yeah, very much. I do. I've had a few conversations with just friends of mine who know that I did this and have said to me, you know, before I, you know, you made this movie about mass surveillance and it seemed like a problem and I understood why it was a problem, but I frankly can't say I was really that upset by it. And now I am. Wow. When I think about these mass surveillance tools in the hands of this government, it takes on a whole other flavor for me. Now, I don't know that that's going to convert the people that you're talking about who are already just perfectly comfortable and not the type to question authority. But for those who are sort of on the fence or not even necessarily on the fence, but just I think people who, you know, are left-leaning, but just not necessarily excited by this issue. I think maybe them revisiting it now in this new situation with this new president-elect, people have a different emotional reaction to it.
I also wanted to ask all you guys, basically, on that point, is just, like, would this have been worse without us knowing it if Snowden never turned up? Like, if Trump got elected, but Snowden never did blow the whistle, would it have been way worse? Is there at least some awareness now?
Yeah, I think it's better now, because in the UK at least, because at least we know of the powers. It's an impossible question to answer because we don't know what they would have been doing if they hadn't known. But we've got some level of awareness. There's some level of scrutiny. We think it falls far short in that just because we know about it doesn't make it. It's like saying, I'm cheating on you, but you know, I'm being open with you at least. I'm not going to stop cheating on you, but at least you know about it now. Mm-hmm. Is that better than not knowing? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a terrible metaphor.
Yeah.
problematic.
No, but I think also it's very important now because there is more aptitude for people to use encryption, or at least, you know, to be aware of it.
Yeah.
And I think this is also actually what celebrities can promote. Like, same way as the fashion industry did a lot of work for fur. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, not to wear fur. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to use encryption is not something complicated, scalable.
Yeah.
It's not easy, but, you know,
It should be easier, that's for sure.
So yeah, everybody should be, if you can convince at least, you know, 100,000 people to use encryption, I think it's already achieved.
Sure, and I've talked about like using Signal and stuff like that, which does make it pretty easy. But I mean, the folks who have really stepped up, I think, are the technology companies, right? And that's maybe where Snowden has had his greatest impact, is that, you know, Apple, for example, probably first and foremost, has really prioritized security and encryption in their software and in their hardware, I think, much more so than they probably would have if it hadn't been for Snowden. Mm. You think that's safe to say?
Yeah, I mean, still, I think there's probably problems there. But no, I think you're broadly very right that the market...
What problems? I'm curious, what you mean?
Well, for example, iCloud's been hacked.
Yes.
For example. I mean, I'm not a technologist, so I couldn't comment. In fact, Silky probably is far more qualified to talk about the technology.
I should have asked you then.
Well, I think you're right in that the movement is towards there is clearly a demand for privacy and for privacy from the state, which is a kind of pinch yourself moment in 2016. But yeah, I think there is a demand for that.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Companies like Apple's probably been the best, but these big companies, they will go so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the Apple FBI issue was also a PR exercise, and mm-hmm. Apple saying we're prepared to throw our weight around, but actually both sides know that the FBI can get into that phone without any problems.
Right.
There was a bit of front around that whole debate, which is where...
and then they did, right? The FBI did ultimately
get into
the phone.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, and I think made a much bigger fuss about it than they needed to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's where the open source developers are so different. Like Open Whisper Systems, who make Signal,
mm-hmm.
They're the real heroes
mm-hmm.
because they design their software through and through with privacy in mind, so that when they are asked for data on their customers, which they are and they have been, they can say, yeah, sure, here's what we've got, and it's like a timestamp because they've built their whole software to not collect data on the mm-hmm. users in the first place. So this is actually just the cliffhanger that we were talking about before. I was in a conference call with Snowden a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that we need to hardwire human rights into technologies. And that's certainly where I think the human rights groups in the UK and elsewhere, and definitely the US, our sister organisation ACLU, is starting to look.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is so much we can do in policy, there's so much we can do in on the legal side, and we're really good at that. The public engagement side is really hard, and that's where this film obviously is going to be an enormous help. But also, like, developing technologies and having a voice there too is going to be a really essential part of protecting democracy, not only privacy, but just democracy and civil liberties in a digital context.
Yeah.
While we're talking about encryption, I really wanted to ask you, like, making this movie and also being someone who's in the public eye, are there things that you do to, like, be more secure online? You mentioned Signal, but mm-hmm. the bit of the movie that scared the hell out of me, and I mean it scared me anyway, was the bit where you can see through the cameras, and then he starts putting, you know, the tape on all the cameras. What sort of measures do you take to make sure that you're secure online?
Yeah, I've had a Band-Aid on my camera. I, to be honest, don't have one on there now.
I just haven't put it back.
Take it. Oh, thank you. Yay. Thanks, awesome.
Oh, thanks, Lisa.
I think ultimately it also just made me more mindful about how the internet works as a whole, because there's government surveillance, which is important to talk about, but there's also data being collected by, you know, other huge institutions, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that Google is collecting so much data or Facebook is collecting so much data. It depends on what they do with it, and it also depends on how transparent they are with it. I think what's not cool is that I don't think they're exactly transparent about it. You know, they ask you to check a box and agree to a terms of service, but they never really explain to you what you're agreeing to. And I would like to see the culture shift in that way. I started a company called Hit Record, where you know, you can join our site, and it facilitates a collaborative process between artists, and we make, you know, all kinds of productions, and then pay the artists when those productions make money. And when you join our site, there's a legal contract to agree to, but there's also a brief summary in layman's terms, and then there's a video of me saying, like, here's what you're agreeing to, and here's why it matters. And I would like to see more of that.
It's cool, actually. A few insurance companies in this country have started doing that with your terms of service now. Mm-hmm. They'll send it to you as an attachment, but they're like, you're never going to read it, so here's what it says in 5 bullet points.
Yeah,
that's the way it should
there
be.
There should be more of that, yeah.
While we're on the... Sorry, you mentioned Hit Record. And that made me think. So I saw a video that you posted recently, and you talked about wanting to bring people together in the Hit Record community from both sides of the election debate. Because you said that there was you were worried that it's very easy within online communities for it to become an echo chamber, getting your own ideas thrown back at you and reinforcing them constantly. The big part of the Snowden story is that he changed his mind. He wasn't always opposed to this thing. You know, in 2009 he said that people who leak confidential information should be shot in the balls. And then 4 years later he did it himself. So it's very important that people should be able to be exposed to new information and change their mind. And yet you do have this echo chamber effect. And do you think that online communities do make it harder for people to receive new information or change their mind about anything, because all they're hearing is what they want to hear?
So that's something I've been thinking about a lot. There's a lot to say about it. The first thing I'll say is I don't think it's only the technology that's the problem there. I think there's been studies done about how people change their minds. And, you know, you can have someone who has a certain belief, and then you show them facts contrary to their belief, and it almost always makes them cling more strongly to their original belief. Why? That's just, it seems to be sort of in our biology. I've heard the phrase used, we have bad brains, because we're evolved from animals. And, you know, we've talked about, I don't know if you've heard the phrases type 1 thinking and type 2 thinking. I forget who coined that term. Type 1 thinking is basically more animal, and it's much easier. Type 2 thinking happens, they think, just in the cerebral cortex, which is a much newer part of the brain. It takes more energy, and it doesn't come naturally. But that's where you get things like reason and, you know, weighing facts in order to form an opinion, as opposed to sort of making a more emotionally based decision. So all that's to say, it's not just technology's fault.
Yeah.
It's sort of it's how human beings work. But type 2 thinking is often aided by technology. The invention of math, you know, of calculus, of logic, of, like, these are all, they're older, but they are technologies. They're techniques that humans invented to sort of help them think. And computers have the potential to offer us really powerful tools to aid in type 2 thinking, mm-hmm. but that's not really how we're mostly using our computers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were talking about Facebook or Twitter or almost every really popular social media site. Mm-hmm. They're completely geared towards type 1 thinking because that's how they make money. They mm-hmm. feed you kind of addictive little pieces of stimulus that get your, you know, like, you know, your they release endorphins or whatever, and it makes you want to keep scrolling. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the more you scroll, the more ads you see, and that's how they make money. That's not necessarily the way that the internet has to work, mm-hmm. But that is how it's working today. I don't know how we necessarily go about changing that. Probably the best way would be is if someone could find another business model that mm-hmm. That does as well. Wikipedia is a good example of someone doing something differently. You know, they're a nonprofit and they survive on donors and on volunteers. And they've made a site that's really quite different than Facebook. And not that Wikipedia is perfect, but it's amazing. It's mm-hmm. And it offers so much information, and that information is, you know, hyperlinked to other information, mm-hmm. and you can really use it as a tool to learn mm-hmm. and figure things out. Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer. On Hit Record, you know, we're obviously a completely different scale than things like Wikipedia or Facebook. It's a relatively small community of, you know, 500,000 people that are generally young and artistically inclined people. So maybe that's an echo chamber of its own kind, you know. Mm-hmm. But I am interested, and we haven't done anything yet. But I'm interested to try to see what kind of projects we can do to, I don't know, to reach out and try to communicate better mm-hmm. with folks who have perspectives other than ours.
Yeah. Have you thought about using Hit Record to get out messages about online privacy and surveillance?
Yeah, we have. We did a partnership with the ACLU. You just mentioned the ACLU. Yeah, and we made a series of short films called "Are You There, Democracy? It's Me, the Internet," and they were about sort of lots of different perspectives on, you know, how technology and democracy impact each other. Got lots of different ideas from different people all over the world. Snowden himself contributed, and we made a short film out of his answer. And he actually was quite optimistic, and he was talking about how, look. And you can watch it for yourself, but what he basically said was, certainly there are things that seem negative, but if you zoom out, overall, technology is making everything better. I shouldn't say everything. Technology is ultimately having a net positive effect is a better way to say it. And, you know, the more that we are you know, whether it's energy or education or medicine or science, all of these things advancing means that people are going to have more liberty, and liberty is good for democracy ultimately. And I like to agree with him. I mean, and certainly at this moment, especially, what with the recent election in the US or with this bill you're talking about passing in the UK, that does feel like a step backwards. And I'm no expert historian, but it does seem like history is generally moving forward, but it doesn't only move forward. Sometimes it goes sideways, sometimes it goes backwards, and then it keeps moving forwards. And, sometimes maybe even in a way it has to go backwards a little bit before it can go further forward. So yeah. I don't know if that sounds, like a generic pep talk or something, but, But I do think that that's overall true. It doesn't mean we shouldn't keep fighting.
Yeah. We've got time for one more question, if that's okay.
You mentioned Twitter, and I know you're a big Twitter guy. Do you feel like that? Do you feel like it's broken? Do you feel like there's a way that they can fix it? And do you think they're making sort of the right moves to get that platform back on track? Or is it just going to keep getting worse and giving a voice to people that maybe shouldn't have as much of a platform as they do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not convinced that any of our really popular social media sites are the best way that people can use the internet to communicate. They all do certain things well, and it depends on how you use them. But I definitely look forward to more innovations in that world. Yeah. And, you know, let's not forget that, you know, 10 years ago, no one had ever heard of Facebook, and everyone thought that MySpace was going to be the thing forever. And then look what happened. You know? So certainly Facebook has gotten a lot more popular now than MySpace ever was. And it's so popular that it sometimes seems like it'll just remain kind of this monopoly forever. And I don't know, maybe it will. But I wouldn't count out the notion that, you know, other things, other ways of doing it might come in. And I'm not saying that I have the answer of how that's going to work, but I have my eyes peeled.
Yeah.
Cool. We've got to end it there, I'm afraid.
Thanks.
Cool. Do you mind if we do a quick
group
photo?
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was there like you, like self-medicating on Twitter after Trump.
Yeah.
And after a while, you're like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
It doesn't help.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we'll... Cool. You all want to get together?
I'll take a photo with your camera or however. I'll take one with my camera.
Wait, next year, London, for a while.
Back home tomorrow.
Yeah, back to the family. Nice.
Right.
I'll hope you get London money.
I don't think when I come together, I feel like I...
Shall we not stand in front of the TV?
Yeah. Ironically, yeah. So maybe, yeah, that's it. Thanks, guys.
Can we all squeeze?
Yes, I can have... I'll take maybe two different ones. I'd get a quick approval from everyone, so everybody's happy. So everybody looks good. I think that's good. I'm just going to show everyone that everyone's okay with this.
No, I'm not. As long as there's no blur, it's fine.
Yes.
Yeah, fine.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Cool.
Good cheers. Luck.
Thanks very much.
Thank
great time. It's a great movie.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, cheers, man.
Thanks a lot. Awesome. Nice to meet you.
It was such a pleasure.
Cheers, thanks very much. Nice to meet you too.
Thanks for the stickers.
Pleasure, absolute pleasure.
Do you guys want to hang out for
a
little gift bag for you as well?
Oh, wonderful.
From our organization.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate
it. Enjoy
it. Cool.
We expect you to read all the literature.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.